The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 519, recorded on November 1st, 2018.
Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 352nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So guess what I've been playing? Actually, Call of Cthulhu came out and I'm really interested in playing that, but I'm actually playing, of course, Red Dead Redemption. According to the progress meter, I am 50% through.
Wow, really? Did you say 50%?
Yes, 50%.
How much have you been playing?
I'm at chapter 5 now, I think it is.
Oh, so you're getting along.
Yeah, First I move from that place to that place, and then that place to that. So I'm on my third location. We keep pulling up stakes and moving away because the leader of our gang is an idiot.
Aw.
He's a cult-like messiah, Dutch Vanderlind idiot.
He can't fight his nature, Jonah. Yeah.
But here's the thing. There's one problem with Red Dead Redemption 2 being a prequel. Uh-huh. Is that there is no tension with John, Abigail, and Jack. Because you know they have to live and they're going to be A-OK. There's no tension there.
Yeah,
or else Red Dead Redemption doesn't happen.
Yeah, when I started sitting down to that game with my wife, she hasn't seen the story, but I have, and it's sort of like it's a feeling for me when I go in there just like looking at all these characters that we know are in the first game and don't come out so well, and it's like, Now, they do rectify that by putting in a bunch of other characters that are decent. I like Arthur. I like the guy that you play as for.
Do we ever hear about Arthur in Red Dead? Because I keep thinking that, yeah, he was a character that we met at some point, or did they reference it?
They may have referenced him in, like, some small thing, but he wasn't explicitly part of the plot at all.
I mean, we know that Agent Ross from the Pinkertons isn't going to die.
Maybe Arthur is that do-I-know-you guy.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's who you play in this. There's a slight karma meter. I've tried to, but I have some problems with the controls. Sometimes you'll end up shooting people that you didn't want to, but because the context-sensitive idiocy just, oh, wait, you wanted to do that? Sure, here you go.
Yeah, I think it's really a dumb move that they made interact with people the same button as pull out and aim your weapon.
Yeah. And here's the biggest problem with Red Dead Redemption 2. It's too big. If you don't have your horse, and you can't just summon your horse anytime you like, if they're out of scope, they're out of scope. In Red Dead Redemption 2, it doesn't matter where your horse is, you whistle from, he comes. But here, you know, you may end up on foot. And it's sort of like a temptation, well, maybe if I steal this person's horse. You know, you're just hoping that you meet some enemy gangs so that they could pull guns on you so you could just shoot them dead and take their horse.
Mm-hmm.
You know? One of the things is, though, it is a very pretty game. I mean, there's an odd... Because I'm playing on 4K HDR, right? But here's an odd thing is that around the characters themselves, they get pixelated. And I think that's a shortcut. I think it's because there's so... You know, the graphics are so high that you have to... They had to find a shortcut somewhere. So when you're riding, you might notice there's this little halo around you of pixelated grass because it's not rendering the grass on, you know, behind the character.
Yeah, I noticed something like I mentioned before. I noticed something like that in God of War on PS4 as well, where like everything is beautiful from the distance, but there's this one spot where you go up to a rock and the trees they like point in your direction no matter what side of the rock you approach them from. And
oh,
I'm
that it's more like it's like 100 DPI, you know, it's like really low resolution. just around the character, just a little bit around the character, so that, you know, for some reason they can't render the characters and the object they're on at the same time. And this is on the Xbox One X version, you know, which has all the bells and whistles.
Right, but what I mean is that that particular instance was most certainly a thing where, like, you weren't ever supposed to see that up close. It was a shortcut for them to make the distance, the scenery and the distance look always a little, I would say, better.
Yeah. I like and how they really show off the graphics and say, look, when you go through the snow, you're actually making a dent in it, and it'll stay there. Here's the thing. The opening was so slow. I mean, the entire game is really on a slow burn until, like, 33% when you go down south, and then things really pick up. But the first 20% of the game is such a slow burn. It's sort of like Alien Isolation. It's like, I'm bored now. Can we do something?
I would agree with that. For what I've played, I haven't had an issue with it yet. But I am noticing, like, that it is a very, very, like, for lack of better terms, the tutorial for the game is, like, a good 5 hours long.
But here's the thing. A lot of the tutorials are side missions, like how to fish, how to hunt, that sort of stuff. And it's sort of like, in the first game, you felt compelled to do it. I don't know why. But in this game, it's sort of like, well, we don't really give a shit about fishing, but it's there. You want to catch legendary fish? Go ahead. You know,
mm-hmm.
I finally skinned my first perfect buckskin. You know, sort of like, because you keep on getting all this low rent trash, and finally, oh yeah, now I finally skinned it because I used a bow and arrow and I found the right buck. You know, you have to do all this stuff. I'm still trying to find the lures to catch legendary fish.
Mm-hmm.
You need special lures to catch them, because right near your camp, your second camp. There's a legendary, I think it's a bass.
Legendary bass.
Yeah, there's 12. And of course, there's a lot of collectathons, like finding those premium cigarette cases for the cards inside them. And
yeah.
You have to smoke the premium cigarettes if you have 10 of them, because you can't fit more. And I think there's more crafting than you normally have, you know? And it's like... And here's the other thing. I haven't gotten to the multiplayer yet. I don't know if it's active yet or not. I go to the social club. All it takes you is to a web page.
Yeah, there's nothing going on in the social club. I don't think that the multiplayer for Red Dead Redemption 2 is quite ready yet.
Yeah.
That said, how do you feel about it so far?
I'm actually preferring the first game. It's a lot tight. Here's the thing about Red Dead Redemption 2. In my eyes, they shouldn't have gone bigger. They should have gone the same size, if a little smaller, and focused on character interaction. Now, there's a lot of character interaction when you're in a camp and all that stuff. But a lot of it, when you're outside the thing, it's sort of like, you do this, and then they'll reappear later to give you a reward, or give you a reward right now. You know, it's a lot of perfunctory stuff. I mean, there's a lot of if you shoot a deer, skin it, and leave its body there, over time it's gonna rot until when you finally come back it'll be bones. You know, there's a lot of detail. Pay attention to that. But I would have preferred, you know, focusing on one area and keeping the story focused in that one area, because by the nature of the story, it's sprawling, but that comes with a price. You know, I would have preferred something a little bit more intimate, especially since we're dealing with Dutch's gang. And, you know, there are certain things that haven't happened with you yet. So, you know, I at least had one shocking moment, one shocking moment to me, that is. And I don't know how far along you are in the game yet, but it does hit the group hard. But then another thing happens that should be shocking, but I'm saying, well, I know how Red Dead Redemption is. Nothing's going to happen bad to this person.
Mm-hmm.
I know they could. We know that Billy Williamson is going to survive because he's the guy you're hunting in Red Dead Redemption 2. I mean,
yeah.
If they're going to kill someone, it's probably going to be Dutch, because they keep on talking about Dutch in Messianic terms in the first game. Dutch did this, Dutch did that, you know, so... We know that Jack and his family are going to survive. I mean, that's about it. I mean, there's actually one character which I really like. It's Hosea. I don't even know what's going to happen to him. I'm going to guess he's probably going to get because he's not the only sane man. As a matter of fact, he still has his own little delusions. But at least he's smart enough to know what's going on, so that tells me he's going to die at some point. That's my prediction in the game. He's going to get offed. I mean, it's not that big a stretch since, you know, John Marston got shot up by a billion bullets in the first game. So they're perfectly willing to kill the main character. So I'm pretty sure that Arthur... Although, actually, you know, it'd be... I wonder if they're going to subvert expectations and just have Arthur go into hiding for the rest of the game. Like, he what's it called? People think he's dead, but he's actually in hiding. We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can do the Bolivian Army ending that they did in the first game.
Yeah, there's nothing to say that, like, this has to... I mean, it's not like... it's not like the Death Star Star Wars movie where you know everybody died that was involved. It's sort of just like they were scattered to the winds, and you know of certain people that you had to go after in the first game. So there's a lot of there is freedom to do what they want with the characters that weren't introduced and like explicitly pathed out in the first game. But it does remove a lot of the mystery when it comes to certain central characters.
Yeah.
I always have that issue with prequels. Like, if I know where it's going to lead, then it's less easy for me to care about all the good things and bad things happening to them.
Hey, but at least we find out how John got his scars. He was an idiot.
Yes.
He was an idiot. That's how he got his scars.
So, if you weren't thinking of it, is there any way for you to remove this game from Red Dead Redemption 1 and judge it on its own merit? And, like, if that's the case, what would you say about it?
I would say the same thing. It's a bit large. And to be fair, you know, it's a lot more focused than other open world games. But, you know, it's hedging too close to Grand Theft Auto. Because when you die, I expect, instead of saying you died or died, I expected to see wasted on the screen. It's starting to become a little bit more like Grand Theft Auto, and I'm not happy about that, because Red Dead Redemption, the first one, had its own, you know, I was able to complete Red Dead Redemption. I've never completed a Grand Theft Auto game, because halfway through I'm bored. Oh, you want me to do another remote control little drone mission again, like in the third game? Now, those remote control planes... I stopped playing after that. I just said, screw this.
Well, at least you won't have remote control planes in 1899.
Yeah. Well, you never know. They'll always find a way. Actually, well, here's the thing is that one thing about our protagonist is that this is still – he's like John in that you can have him try to be a nice guy, but he's still a terrible person. You know, mm-hmm. You're going to rob banks. You're going to rob stagecoaches. And it's not going to affect your karma meter. Because we're in a darker shade of gray right now.
Right. My initial perception of Arthur is I like him better than I like John. John was... John could be terrible, but he was pretty much mostly honorable. Arthur is sort of like a blank slate. And he's definitely into the cult of Dutch. So,
well, actually, he's not stupid enough to know when Dutch is making a mistake, and he will privately talk to Dutch and tell him, and, you know, Dutch will sometimes, so far, is starting to realize, yeah, I'm doing some stupid decisions. You know, here's the great thing about this game. It's a smart game about not-so-bright people. For example, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've gotten it to yet, but when you go to the southern town, you're going to have the Greys and the Braithwaites, which is basically the Capulets and the Montagues, you know, even have that side story. As a matter of fact, there is Romeo and Juliet. I don't know what happens to them yet. I don't even know if anything happens to them. But it's like they think they can be like Clint Eastwood in A Fistful of Dollars and just play them off against each other, and they're horribly wrong. They're not that stupid.
Yeah.
You know. So. It's like you're watching these people who are not too bright slowly get succumbed by the fact that they're not too bright, and there are one or two bright people, or three, let's see, you have Hosea, you have Arthur, and you have the moneylender, Mr. Strauss,
mm-hmm.
you know, who all seem to be, you know, the last part of the Strauss thing when you're in the South, I get the impression it's sort of like an I Know You moment from the first game, except it's not supernatural. We'll see. Like I said, I've only played halfway through the game. And one of the good things is, you know, I get this distinct impression that, A, it's going to have an unhappy ending because it's Red Dead Redemption. I'll be shocked if this has a happy ending. Or I'll be shocked if it doesn't have a bittersweet ending, you know. I'll be shocked if Arthur doesn't bite it, you know. Like I said, that would be the twist.
I have a theory about what happens, and I'm not sure if I want to share it just yet.
Well, you can share it. It's speculation.
My theory is that it ends with where it ends, like with the implied action of where the first game began, where the gang betrays John.
Well,
that would make sense.
No, actually, but I don't know. Did the gang betray John? And
where? Yeah, they betrayed him and left him for dead.
Oh no, no. What happens is that no, they didn't betray
him. Because he and Abigail tried to leave.
He had his family kidnapped, and he went to the. Oh, I see what you're saying. But he didn't betray them. He just told them that they have my wife and kid, and we need you to, we need you to. Actually, you know, I'm coming up in the part where there's a mirror to that, and I can't say any more, you know. And it's the middle of the game, though. But it involves John. But the thing is that, you know, he wasn't that. They were just refusing his request. You know, he was no longer a part of the gang. You know, I think what happens is that John at some point leaves the gang. They didn't betray him. He just left.
Oh, that's right. You're right. They pretty much left the gang.
And you can probably tell where this is going with the characters, with John and Abigail and Jack, because they're starting to, you know, I can't say any more because I'm going to spoil the game. But I'm just saying that they're drawing a clear line to him just leaving the gang, and perhaps not on too fond of it. It could be. I don't know. We don't know how. Here's the thing, actually, you know, maybe Arthur tells them to get the fuck out for their own good, you know, and Arthur gets killed. Maybe that's going to happen. Like, Arthur was their last friend in the game.
I did hear about people feeling that the game was a little bit too spaced out, so it kind of gave this bored feeling because they didn't know where stuff was happening and things were not well paced.
Well, at least here's the thing: they do tell you exactly where the main storyline is, because you'll have the initials of the characters that you have to speak to. So there's no problem in, you know, finding the main storyline. The problem is that 30% of this game is going to be you on your horse. There's no quick travel. I mean, there is sort of kinda with the train and the stagecoach. But here's in the original game, when you went on a stagecoach, you could opt to let it go, like you're in World of Warcraft, just ride the mount all the way from point A to point B. Here they just change the scenery. Okay, you're there now, you know, which is a little disappointing because, you know, it's sort of like, oh, I'll just stay on the stagecoach. I'll go to the bathroom. When I come back, they'll still be riding. Sort of like in World of Warcraft, when you were taking a mount from one end of the map to the other. You remember how long that took? It took like 5 minutes, maybe more. It's sort of like, yeah. Time to. That's how they had the entire World of Warcraft Bejeweled built in, so you can play Bejeweled while you're waiting for the mount for your ride to finish.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, you know, I think for that reason, sometimes Red Dead Redemption 2 seems smaller than the first Red Dead Redemption, in that, you know, you have to work hard to find the ancillary stuff. You know, it is so focused on the main storyline that you really have to work not to. And also, the crafting isn't all that great either. I mean, it's okay in that you can improve, but it's not like if I get a perfect deer skin, okay. If I get enough of these, I can upgrade part of the camp so it looks better. That's about it. You know.
Yeah.
The crafting is like I said, is divorced from the rest of the game. I pity whoever is doing the Prima guide for this game. I really do. it'll make you doing a ukulele seem like just doing a two-page pamphlet.
I haven't had a chance to talk to – I know a lot of those guys that at work at Primond are actually working on this project. And, yeah, they have pointed out that it is not entirely that fun to hunt down any of this stuff.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Rockstar sends them, this is where all the stuff is. Just make it into a book. But still.
You would think, but.
The other big problem I have the game now is that they complicate stamina, Deadeye, and health by including health cores, stamina cores, and Deadeye cores, which I really do not like. I mean, they just make it simple. Just how much Deadeye do you have? That's it. You don't need to have the cores.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm already having a little bit of an issue with the whole eat. You have to eat food to keep your stamina up, or you're able to scroll all over the.
They separate the stamina. You know, like Deadeye and Deadeye cores. You know, you just can't have your Deadeye, what's it called, thing be full. That's just a timer. But if you have no Deadeye, you're gonna wobble around your aim like a drunk person, and that really irritates the heck out of me.
I absolutely mind the stamina meter because it's literally just one more thing that I have to go into my menu to fix. And
the stamina, I never really have to run that much. I mean, it's the horse stamina that I worry more about.
Well, stamina also affects your aim and also affects your.
I don't know. I never run anywhere, so it's not like I deal with that. That said,
I do because
said,
I want to get to the game.
I'm just gonna say you can get tonics by the boatload. You just find them on everything. They're relatively inexpensive. And by the way, when you rob a bank in the middle of the game, you're going to end up with over $3,000.
Wow. Yeah, I just don't like the idea of something that I have to go into the menu like every so often to fix. And it just sort of breaks up and jars the action is what I think.
You know, when you're riding your horse, it's kind of easy. You know, you just hold down the left button and just do the wheel and just pick some worms to eat. Well, not worms to eat, but, you know, whatever to eat, oatmeal, stuff like that, sort of like, you know. So that isn't the problem that I have. I just don't know why they had to include cores. I'm willing to bet you it has something to do with multiplayer.
Probably.
The multiplayer in Red Dead Redemption, I recall, was really popular. And they didn't have to have cores and stuff like that. I don't know.
I didn't really find myself needing Deadeye all that much in the first game. In fact, I think...
Deadeye made it an easy game. Just, I'm going to pick out my target, boom, 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 you're dead.
It did make it an easy game. I think I didn't use it until the part where you have to shoot a hat out of the air.
Actually, this game makes it easier because now if you level up your Deadeye enough, it'll show you red parts. And if you avoid the red parts, you won't kill them, so it's a lot easier to shoot someone's hat off their head.
Red Deadeye parts?
Anyways.
I find it, though, interesting to play a different character. You're playing as Arthur as opposed to playing as John. Hmm. So you're kind of seeing John from a different perspective, a different lens.
And you're seeing him as sometimes as an idiot. I mean, here's the thing. He starts getting smarter and smarter as it goes along, so you get to see the character development there. But the reason why he got those scars is because he didn't give a shit about his wife and his kid, and he went out into the mountains and he got attacked by wolves. He scratched up his face.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So it's not a spoiler. It's the thing that happens in the first half hour of the game. Oh, we have to go get John because he's a moron.
Apparently.
I like Kieran, who's the guy who you rescue, well, not rescue, but you spare from the O'Driscolls. And he says he's never from the O'Driscolls. And as you're going through the game, you know, it's sort of like he has to deal with shit because he can't leave this gang and he can't approach the other gang because the other gang will shoot him, and this gang is the only place where he's safe. But they don't like him much because he once, rode with the Driscolls, but he was just a gopher. And the thing they say about the Driscolls, they're like the Sabbat in Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. They just recruit, recruit, recruit. They don't give a shit about them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say, I don't know if you got into it, but at the halfway point, you're going to absolutely despise the O'Driscolls, and you're going to want to put a gun in Colmel Driscoll's mouth yourself. It has nothing to do with Dutch.
Well, that's good. As an antagonist, I should want to do that to them.
It's well written. I'll say that. I haven't seen anything that's cringeworthy yet. I mean, the characters act the way they are because that's the way they are. I mean, Dutch is just a grandiose loudmouth who thinks he's Jesus. Oh, by the way, his girlfriend keeps on wanting to talk to him about something in my head. It's, yeah, she's pregnant. So pregnant. She's not showing any bump yet, but she's definitely pregnant. And that's why she keeps on wanting to talk to him. It's like just teleport. And now I give her a 50-50 chance of either she's going to die or live. Although I think she might live. Either she'll live because Dutch is killed and she'll have his baby and she'll go off. Or she'll be killed and then reveal she was pregnant and that'll make Dutch go berserk and he'll do something suicidal. Those are the two story arcs I see ahead with that little plot twist. I mean, there's no way she can't not be pregnant. So hearing us talk about it, Scott, do you want to play Red Dead Redemption 2?
I don't know. I've been hearing a lot of negative stuff about it, so I'm not really sure.
You know, the negative stuff I see about it is sort of like it's an awesome game. These are the things, little things about it that bug me about it, which me and TJ have already discussed, you know, like stamina cores and stuff like that, you know. It's like you have this beautiful painting and there's a couple of splotches on it that, you know, it's close to perfection, but the fact it's good makes those flaws stand out that much more.
I think for me, see, the thing is, like, I know people complain about prequels, but people keep asking for prequels. Like, people want a prequel to Harry Potter so they can see Tom Riddle rise to Voldemort as if the story didn't say exactly how he rose to power. So it just seems strange.
What?
You know,
you don't want to know how Anakin became Darth Vader?
No, I didn't. I wanted to see the next story.
Neither did I.
I'm just saying. People kept wanting to see prequels.
Yeah.
So for me, I feel like the story's kind of done.
Here's the thing. I don't think they did a prequel just to show how John became the John Marston we know. At least in this case, it feels like a story that they wanted to tell. Like, yeah, you know, we want to keep it in the Old West because the thing about Red Dead Redemption is it takes place in 1908, 1910. The Old West is done. It is, you know, it's gone. You know, here they're saying we want to take it back like 20 years so that at least we can have all the Old West tropes. And, you know, we can see what it was like. I mean, I wouldn't mind it if they did a completely different gang who had nothing to do with John. Maybe John makes a little cameo. Hi, I'm John Marston. Okay, see you later. TJ, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be explicit here. I did not buy this game. It was given to me.
Well, guess what? I bought mine for $20, even though it's the Ultimate Edition.
I've already made abundantly clear what my issues are with the Red Dead Redemption story. The ending sucks and is wrong and should have gone a different way.
Red Dead Redemption was great, and it wasn't. It was bad.
It was bad, and it could have led to a sequel,
you didn't like the ending. That's
because it was garbage.
It was not garbage. It was just you didn't like it. You grew attached to John Marston, but everybody could see that was what was coming.
I don't give a shit about John Marston. I think it should have ended there. I do care about the fact that Jack Marston becoming a criminal. No, I hated the fact that it let you play out the thing with Edgar Ross and Jack Marston at the end of the game instead of making Red Dead Redemption 2 that game.
No, what was the – no, no. It's
yes, and yes. Because
you can keep thinking that all you like. We've heard this before a couple of months ago.
No, I have to agree with TJ. I would I would be much more influenced buying Red Dead Redemption 2 if it was Jack's quest to avenge his dead father, because then I would have been so pissed off and so outraged at the ending. I'd be like, you better let me go get these guys. And if they made a sequel where they let me get that would be so satisfying.
Absolutely. No. And if it ended with John Marston dying and that's it, and you don't get a chance to do anything about it, how impactful would that be? It would be so impactful.
Awesome. I recorded the ending and You can view it on my Xbox.com account with the final redemption, just going on the screen after Jack offs Edgar Ross. It was a perfect ending.
It wasn't
maybe
at all.
You want Bambi's mother to live, you know.
I know. Bambi's mother has to die because that's what makes you care about what happens next.
Exactly.
This is so off the point. Hey, so Scott, you haven't been playing Red Dead Redemption 2. What have you been playing, as if we didn't already know?
Yeah, Dragon's Quest, Minecraft.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Stop. How far have you gotten along now in Dragon's Quest? Because last we heard from you, you were actually getting close to the end.
I am getting close, and I'm just trying to figure out the things I need to do to finish off the boss, and there's some side stuff, and these battles are a lot harder at the end.
Don't tell me you have to grind like every other JRPG out there.
I'm hoping that I can use better tactics and not have to grind.
Yeah,
I really
grind.
Don't want
TJ,
to.
You know what? He's going to have to grind. It's unfortunate. It's a JRPG. They can't help but make you grind.
Well, I hope not, because it's a JRPG in 2018, and they've learned their lessons elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's nowhere near as bad as Final Fantasy 1. That was terrible. You had to grind every step of the way. Here, I think I just have to use better tactics, that's all.
Yeah, well, Blue Dragon, I got to 75%, and then I got to a point in which I said, no, I can't grind now. As I'm at level 40, and they want me to get to level 50? No, I'm done. I don't want to grind
now.
The same wandering monsters. See, that's the one problem I have with D&D growing up, was that, yeah, you can have wandering monsters in a pen and paper RPG, but not in a computer game.
Hmm.
I mean, wandering monsters are just supposed to add flavor, and they're not supposed to grind your XP.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and they've been remastering and re-releasing a lot of RPGs from, like, the they're about to do Resonance of Fate, which is one of my favorite JRPGs from the Xbox 360 era of JRPGs. And the only thing I think about is, man, I hope they consider the fact that they made that game holy hell grindy and they do something to smooth it out. Because John Woo-style RPG gun battles are cool, but not if you have to do them every 2 minutes.
You know, that's what made Deus Ex so great. You got XP for everything, and the XP just made it a little bit easier. You could go through the entire game and not fill out all your bars and still finish it. You know, you could decide, I'm not going to spend any experience points whatsoever. I'm just going to, you know, and it'll allow you to do that.
Yeah.
You know, here, you know, I don't know. At least the RPG elements in RDR2 are light, you know. And here's the thing, you often don't see them happening. I mean, it'll say, stamina level number 6. And I'll be like, what? How? What? You don't notice it because the game is playable no matter what, you know. The only thing that really matters to me is having your Deadeye meter full so that when you get into these gun battles, you can just say, okay, I'm going to press the I win button now.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you know, you don't even need a lot of the times you don't need it because you just it'll auto-aim at the guy's torso. You just move your joystick up and you'll be able to aim at his head.
Yep.
There's one cool moment in which there's a hostage taken and you have four people and you just Deadeye and bang, 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 you know, and all of a sudden, you know, comes back to real time and he just blows them all away. And the guy who's holding hostage says, holy Jesus, so satisfying. Sort of like the moment in Fallout 4 when I rescued the guy who's a big fan of the Silver Shadow, you know. I actually uploaded that to YouTube in which I told everybody in the room, you know, you're dealing with the Silver Shadow and if you face me down, no one here walks out alive. And every one of the mooks just backs down and says, no, we're not doing this. The main guy didn't, but I just used my aim with my best gun. Boom, boom, 2 headshots. His head exploded by a cantaloupe, and the guy was saved. It was such a... I'll have to show you... I'll give you the link to the video of how I did it. I'll put it in the podcast notes, too.
So, despite talking so much about Red Dead Redemption 2, that was actually not the game I played this week.
By the way, you know that the graveyard game? Oh, jeez, I forgot the name of it.
Graveyard Keeper.
Yeah, they just got DLC for it, and they, you know, and I believe it's free.
I'll definitely be going back to that game to play that, so I'll tell you guys what it's about. But
wait, you played it too, right?
I have played it, yes.
Yeah, so the DLC is available and it's free, so just so you know.
I'm into it.
I'll check it out.
But I only had like a few. I only played Red Dead Redemption 2 for like maybe an hour this last week. But what I did
that
play
is one
was...
rough hour. I mean, in terms of just being slow,
it picks up
once you get your second hideout.
Yes.
I see DLC for an art book and soundtrack, and they are not free.
Yeah. Maybe it was a free update instead of DLC.
Yeah, it's. I'm gonna look this up, but yeah, it was free. The Graveyard Keeper. I'll give you full. Here it is, Breaking Dead DLC. They just launched it. This update adds a resurrection table to your morgue. You can now choose to resurrect corpses and have them take care of your daily chores in your graveyard.
I like this idea.
Yes.
You can actually create logistics chains where the zombies automate sale of merchandise for extra profit. And you
can
upgrade the zombies.
That's so much better than what you already have to do.
Well, yes, what it sounds like to me is that basically you can automate it, but you can also do sort of like macros. So that's why you're like, okay, I'm going to have you gather the stone, and when you get a certain amount of stone, you'll sell it.
Yes, sort of like zombie that. Economy.
God. I'll make them go gather marble because I have to get it from the freaking far quarry.
It is so far away.
I know.
Yeah, it was launched 3 days ago, so.
Okay.
But yeah, I've actually been fiddling with something else this week, and extensively. Deltarune, which is, for those who don't know, a little sort of sequel to Undertale.
I saw that.
Yes, this was something that that Toby Fox and the Undertale Twitter, they put up a little teaser to say, so to speak, and then they just sort of released it. And I thought it was just going to be a teaser, a sneak peek for something else that Toby Fox and the Undertale crew were working on. Now it's a full experience.
Yeah, and the thing is that now Undertale fans are, according to Kotaku, are having theories about what's going on in Deltarune. It's sort of like they have all these little fan theories.
It introduced so many different things that are like, what, and what? Why is this happening? What is going on?
By the way, for those of you who don't know, it's a free standalone RPG, which is set in the Undertale universe. But it's a standalone.
Yes. It's and I will say, having finished it, it's chapter one of, and chapter two is supposedly coming. So it's not going to be the last of its kind. It's looking like Toby is going to be releasing some sort of episodic format for this, and I'm excited for it because the characters that they introduced in this are really fun.
Okay. Are you excited to find out who W.D. Gaster really is?
You know, I hope he never answers that question because it's kind of fun to just have that stay a mystery.
Well, the game hints at it, so it's not like it'll outgrow, you know.
Yes, but no one's – like, there's been no explicit – there's been no explicit confirmation of what Gaster is or what he did or how it ended up.
Okay, other than the question, did you notice, and I'm pretty sure other people did, that Deltarune is an anagram of Undertale?
Absolutely. There's a lot of anagrams in this game, actually. and I won't spoil them, but that said, the game goes deeper into it's actually feels like a good evolution of Undertale, where like in the first game you just had yourself in a forward facing first person RPG format, so it did the natural evolution of that, where this time you actually have a party and it's like Final Fantasy style battle format, but still keeps like the bullet hell mechanic from the first game, and it feels good. It's like a good little evolution of what they built up in the first game. And
did
a good
try to name your character Gaster?
No, I didn't. I tried to name him something else, but it didn't work. They do. I mean, there are so many Easter eggs in there, and people are going to be looking at this for probably months on end, trying to unravel everything that's in there and data mining the code and whatever. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see this new, this new pretty much era of Undertale stuff that will hopefully continue to happen for a while, because like even if the game wasn't good, the music is some of my favorite soundtracks out there, and Deltarune's soundtrack did not disappoint me. But even then, it's not a bad game. Like, I'm gonna gush over this, but like, the characters in this game, to me, and in the Undertale game as well, are much better than other, are pretty good compared, like, they have some pretty good writing behind them, where like their emotional turmoil and their connections and everything going on feels genuine. And so I actually, like, people grow to care about these characters. There are the little nods and the Easter eggs and the funny stuff like Sans and Papyrus, but when it comes down to like the impact of some of the choices and some of the things it does, it really does feel genuine, where like some RPGs and some, and even some shows, like the characters just feel hollow.
I don't know. It's not my kind of game, but you know, and by that I mean it's not my, I'm not into the meta stuff. I don't like, you know, games that go super meta are sort of like, just leave me cold sometimes.
Yeah, and I can understand that. This is definitely one of those things where it goes out of its way with the meta stuff. I feel like it melds it in pretty good, to the point where it's not like blatantly telling you at every corner, hey, remember that you're playing a game, but...
You mean like Doki Doki?
Yes, that.
The one that tells you, oh, it'd be so nice if you don't delete this file. Don't whatever you do, don't delete this file in this folder.
Yeah. I'm going to be super sad if Deltarune has something that connects back to the original game, because my hard drive crashed a while back and I lost my files from the original Undertale.
Oh, poor you. Well, now you can do it. Oh, wait. Here's the thing. If you go the entire murder route, doesn't it affect your game and all future games?
There's a lot of things in that game that affect your game and all future games.
Like, if I remember correctly, if you go the full homicide, kill everything, it sort of ruins trying to do stuff in the future with the game.
Mm-hmm. It will remember that you did that and remind you. Yeah, there are a ton of things in Undertale where if you try to, like, for instance, if you like loot, if you make a bad choice and then you turn it off and then you restart it, it'll be like, I saw you do that. You closed out the game. You're not going to get away with it.
Oh, that's not too surprising. Every single cell phone game does that. It just isn't, we saw you do that. It's sort of like, yeah, we have a save state. So guess what? We remember the save state.
Right. And it's the characters in the game that are talking about that, or at least a couple of them.
Well, you get, why can't you just tell it, well, my power went out?
It doesn't believe you. It doesn't believe that your power conveniently went out as soon as you made the wrong choice that ended up horribly.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the gaming flashback. This 8 weeks flashback is Mirror's Edge. Mirror's Edge is a first-person action-adventure platform video game developed by EA DICE and published by Electronic Arts. The game was announced in July 2007, and was released for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 in November 2008. A Windows version was released in 2009. Mirror's Edge is powered by the Unreal Engine 3 with the addition of a new lighting solution developed by Illuminate Labs in association with DICE. Mirror's Edge is set in the quasi-futuristic dystopian society in which a network of quote-unquote runners, including the main character Faith Connors, act as couriers to transmit messages while avoiding government surveillance. In the style of a 3D, three-dimensional platform game, the player guides Faith over rooftops, across walls, through ventilation shafts, and otherwise within urban environments, negotiating obstacles using movements inspired by parkour. The game also has a brightly colored, minimalist style and differs from most previous first-person perspective video games and allowing for greater freedom of movement with regard to its 3D environment. This allows for a wider range of actions, such as sliding under barriers, tumbling wall running, shimmying across ledges, and having no heads-up display and allowing a range of vision in which incorporated arms, legs, and torso of the character are frequently visible elements on screen if it isn't splattered with your own vomit. I added that last part because this is one game that they'll never, ever, 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 ever do a virtual reality VR version of, because then it'll double the sickness. So, yeah, Mirror's Edge, it was at a time in which people were like, wow, EA is coming out with a new a new license game. You know, it's actually, it's not a sequel to anything. And it came so close. It came so close to being great. As it is, it's just good, with one of the best video game songs ever.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the music in that game is incorporated so well. I mean, the menu music sort of hints at the song Still Alive, right? And as you play the game, the song gets fuller and fuller and fuller until near the end, you get the full song, and it feels so earned.
Yeah. And the first Mirror's Edge was surprising. It had there were some issues, but it had a lot of great things going for it that I think, I mean, it inspired a lot of things that came after. I would say that Brink definitely tried to go for a Mirror's Edge style.
Of course, Dying Light, which actually, now Dying Light and, you know, actually did Mirror's Edge right. You know, Mirror's Edge was a proof of concept. Dying Light just took that proof of concept and ran with it.
Yeah. I think Mirror's Edge, like, as much as it is very stylistically cool, it also sort of ignores that when you have things like one of my least favorite segments in an artsy video game is when you there's a shootout with guys in an office building, and there's a freaking heavy machine gun on the ground, and you're telling and you can pick it up and fire it. And
hold on, like, but here's the entire point of the game is that Faith, it has to be non-lethal, and you get an achievement for not shooting anybody, because one of the moves is to disarm a guy, break his gun, and toss it away. You know?
Yeah, and that's what makes the heavy machine gun even dumber, in my opinion.
People are never going to be able to get past this part, so if they're really not that good at this game, they can just shoot people and get out.
I think
it was just a crutch. I think that was just a crutch put there in case people just couldn't handle it.
You know, picking up the shotgun or the assault rifle is kind of okay. The heavy machine gun is where I'm like, oh, come on. This person is like built like a twig and is built to run across buildings at high speed and dodge and jump over everything.
So is Gordon Freeman, but he does it.
And suddenly she's what's his name? Jesse the Body Ventura in Predator 1.
Because Master Chief does that. He picks up these heavy machine guns and just walks with them, just spraying people with it.
I was like, she goes from being a leaf to Jesse the Body to Jesse the Body Ventura in Predator 1 with the minigun.
I ain't got time to bleed.
So
I'm painless here.
I like Mirror's Edge for the most part, but there are some ridiculous turns away from everything that it was accomplishing successfully.
Now we have to talk about Runner Vision. The game actually appears very stark, and you might think, well, it's an unrealistic city, but that's the entire point, because what happens is she's using Runner Vision, which all of the surfaces sort of white out, and the ones that are best for her glow red, so that you can, and there are also blue accents, but I think those are just there so you can orient yourself. But the reds are sort of like, you can go here. Now, I know you love speedrunners, and this is one of the games that everybody loved to speedrun. As a matter of fact, one person was so good at it, he actually ran the game itself.
Yeah, which is impressive. Like, you could see that they built something that was kind of so it was so strict in the way that you were supposed to go, but it was also free-flowing enough that people could do ridiculous, crazy things with it.
Yeah.
Like the original Portal, where you had this concept that is just free flowing enough and just experimental enough that you can break the game in ridiculous and hilarious ways.
Yeah. So, do you want to briefly talk about Mirror's Edge Catalyst?
What's there to say?
I don't know.
It was more Mirror's Edge, but like not in any impressive way.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing: a lot of people liked Mirror's Edge, but the first level, in which it was basically, you know, you have to run from one end to the other. I mean, as the game went along, it became more of a slog, you know. And they should have just. Right now, there's an Xbox Live. They're talking about. I screwed that up. They're having the Xbox, what's it called, Live free games this month. One of those is Assassin's Creed, the first one. They have Battlefield 1 as well. But one of the games they're giving away for free, which I played at E3 a few years ago and I'm really interested in playing, is a game called Race the Sun. And Mirror's Edge should have been more like that.
What is Race of the Sun?
Oh, Race of the Sun is just it's like Wipeout, except it's just a speed race, right? You're not racing against anybody except the time. I'm surprised you never heard of it. And it's a really good indie game. But Mirror's Edge should have been more like that, and just more like, you can tell a story, sure, but make sure that the levels are basically going from one end to the city and another to the other end of the city, and just have various iterations of that city. We don't need to go into the sewers, damn it. What is this? You know, Jet Set Radio Future went into the sewers, too. And it was sort of like, why am I doing this? There's nothing fun in the sewers. Why are we going into the sewers in these games? We don't need to go into the sewers.
Yeah.
Just have us on the rooftops. That's the exciting part.
Yeah, especially for Mirror's Edge, where it's like everything is this mirrored, clean, and pristine world. Like, you don't really
see. I mean, it's not actually like that. And what I like is that we're not really so sure. We're on the side of the good guys. I mean, we don't know what we're delivering. For all we know, we could actually be helping terrorists, literal terrorists. And the only thing that we have to go by is our handler, who's a friend. And spoiler alert, your best friend in the beginning of the game betrays you at the end of the game.
Yeah. Rifle Runner. Yeah. Mirror's Edge was a good experiment. It was if not for Mirror's Edge, then, I mean, for better or worse, certain other games wouldn't have come out, or at least not in the way that they did. The best thing to have come out of Mirror's Edge is going to probably be Dying Light 2, and that's something I'm extremely looking forward to. And I have to, and you just have to look at 2 minutes of Dying Light to be like, ah, yeah, this probably, it might have been possible without Mirror's Edge, but not at the level that it is.
And I will reiterate. Well, go ahead. I mean,
oh, I was just gonna say, or at least like with the movement, anyways. I know there's a lot more to Dying Light than the movement, but the movement is absolutely inspired by Mirror's Edge.
I'm gonna say again, though, the one thing that the game, if anything else, gave us was one of the best video game songs ever. And ironically, this came out a year after Portal, so 2 years in a row we had a song called Still Alive. They couldn't be more possibly different, but if you're out there, just look on YouTube for Still Alive, Mirror's Edge, Lisa Miskovsky. It is a great song, and a great video, too. Da, 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 da. I found, you know the song.
Yes, I do.
Still alive, I'm still alive, you know. And it's funny because I was doing the Game Stooge Awards and I said, guess what? The best song of the year is also called Still Alive. As last year, except before we had a robot singing about it, now we have a woman on a rooftop singing about it. It's also a very dark song, too, if you listen to the lyrics, you know. You know, so silent, no violence, but inside my head so loud and clear. You're screaming, covered up with a smile I've learned to fear.
Yeah. There are a few, only a few games that, like, we don't get games like that that do music like that anymore, it feels like, and or at least not to the level
well,
that they did.
Like I said before, the song itself is incorporated in, you know, you hear the menu music, it's basically a piano version of that, you know, light piano version, and as you go through the game, it builds and builds and builds until you finally get that song with the lyrics and the singing, you know. And here's the thing. Mirror's Edge may have been an okay video game, but I would love to see a film based on that game.
A first-person film? That
no,
would be
no, just a story. Just a story. Because the themes are about betrayal, you know, having, you know, running, you know. I mean, they're a bit on the nose by naming the character you play Faith.
Yeah.
Whenever you name a character Faith in a movie or in a video game, it's sort of like hitting people in the face with a message.
Yeah, the character is either going to be very much that or like completely opposite.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking about Strange Days. Anyways, we're going to move on to the first menu item. Go ahead, Scott. Scott, you there? Or did you fall asleep? Or did he mute himself?
Sorry, I've muted myself. Nintendo recommits to keep the business going for 3DS. This is from Ars Technica. In the age of Nintendo Switch, the company's older 3DS handheld tends to get the short end of the stick in terms of press and player attention. But Nintendo has maintained that it's not going to abandon the dedicated portable, which showed surprisingly resilient sales as recently as this January. In a recent financial briefing, Nintendo recommitted to keep selling and supporting the 3DS, and the company explained why the 8-year-old system continues to have a place next to the Switch. Nintendo 3DS is set apart from Nintendo Switch by its characteristics as a handheld game system that is lightweight, price-friendly, and highly portable. Affordability is the strong point that positions Nintendo 3DS in a niche clearly separate from Nintendo Switch. In the grand scheme of things, Nintendo 3DS has a prominent position as the product that can be served as the first contact between Nintendo and many of its consumers. And for this reason, we will keep this business going. While the 3DS family hardware sales for the last 6 months are down 65% year over year, those reduced sales still represent 1 million new units shipped in a 6-month period. The Switch itself only shipped 5.07 million units during the same period, suggesting that a good chunk of Nintendo's consumers still look for an older, lower-cost option. For context, the Game Boy Advance only shipped 420,000 units in its 8th full-year calendar on store shelves. Even the best-selling original DS managed 2.35 million full-year shipments at the same point in its life. While the long-lived DS hardware line will eventually die out, the 3DS is showing a longer tail than many expected. Upcoming ports like Luigi's Mansion and Bowser's Inside Story could help stretch that out even further in the coming months.
You know, I'll say this. I don't own either a Switch or a 3DS, but if I'm going to buy one of them, I'm going to probably buy a 3DS.
Why is that?
For one thing, I don't need another console, you know, and the portability of the Switch, it may be portable, but it's nothing like... if I take out my DS, I can count on it to last like 8 or 9 hours. There's no way you can do that with the Switch. And also, you know, the games made on the 3DS are portable games, you know. I don't need to play Red Dead Redemption 2 on the go, or Elder Scrolls on the go.
Red Dead Redemption 2 isn't coming to the Switch, it's too big.
Well, I'm just saying, if I had the ability to, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to play something like Pokemon, or New Super Mario Brothers, or Tetris, or Dr. Mario, or stuff like that, you know? I mean, the games I still have for my DS are stuff like Puzzle Fighter.
Yeah, they are segregating games for 3DS only. They don't show up on the Switch's library. They're just over on the 3DS, like the Legend of Zelda. Link to the Past is on the new 3DS, but it's not on Switch or... You know, and there's no reason it couldn't be. They could certainly put it on there if they wanted to. But I think they're clearly keeping certain games on the various store libraries.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. Since I bought my Switch, I bought a new 3DS shortly before the Switch came out, and I have not had a reason to pick up my 3DS since I had the Switch.
Just send it to me. I'll make good use of it.
And it's not that I don't like the 3DS. I played on that system for years. I love it. I just didn't... Once the Switch happened, barring the fact that I have to, like, pack a T-shirt around the Switch when I put it in any of my luggage, it's so...
You can buy a case for that.
I know I can, but I haven't.
DS...
I know I can. I just haven't. So what I do is I just wrap a cloth undershirt around the Switch.
I've done that too.
So barring the fact that I have to worry a little bit more about screen wear and tear on the Nintendo Switch, it's super easy to cart around and super easy to play anywhere I feel like going. And yeah. That was kind of the point of the 3DS for me.
There's a new Symmetry hard protective carrying case for the 3DS for $10.
Yes, okay, really guys. Sweet. I realize I could buy a protective case for
I'm just looking at this case. It just looks really nice.
It's on my to-do list. Maybe. Eventually. Tertiary at best.
But, I mean, yeah, I do agree, TJ. I mean, this Switch came out, and it's this, like, portable game that can connect with all the other consoles, and, you know, there just didn't seem to be any reason not to just port the 3DS library over to the Switch and play on the Switch.
Yeah. And, I mean, I get it. I get why the 3DS is still selling. I mean, A, you can crack that. I think
that's the reason why I buy a handheld console. I'm not there to play homebrew.
Yeah, but there are plenty of people who are.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things that made the PSP survive for as long as it did.
PSP survived until they thought they wanted to make the Go.
Mm-hmm.
The Vita.
But yeah, if they're still selling it, then there's obviously no reason to stop selling it. But that's why I asked you, is like I am actually curious to get inside the mindset of why would you go with a 3DS over a Switch?
I've had a 2DS for a while, you know. But here the thing that's blocking me from buying a 3DS is the fact that I already have a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, there are certain games that you can't get on a smartphone.
Right.
There's a lot of games you can't get on a smartphone.
Well, I'm saying about
games that only use one screen.
I've never really cared about having two screens. That's not, you know, not to mention the Galaxy S8 has a screen that's so big. It's both Nintendo screen. It's actually the size of three 3DS screens. So if they just wanted to divide it into three, you know, it's easy.
Yeah. And they're about to release new controllers for smartphones. Xboxes.
You see, that's the thing. The games I play on my smartphone, I don't give a shit about controllers. I'm not here to play a bullet hell game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to play stuff like Cooking Dash.
But you could, thanks to Yahtzee. The fine folks at Microsoft.
And Yahtzee. I've been playing a hell of a lot of Yahtzee on my cell phone, by the way. I finally got the Coffee League championship. I ranked for that. And, you know, I spent a lot of dice to do that. But, you know, I got... Sometimes I get one of these things, oh, fuck, 40 dice? Really? That'll last me a while.
Yeah.
I'm becoming badass at Yahtzee. We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ. And this one, Capcom. This one is going to make... I'm letting TJ do this one because I want to see how long he can go without expressing so much delight in his voice.
Capcom has high expectations for Devil May Cry 5 and Resident Evil 2 from DualShockers. Today, Capcom released its financial results for the first half of 2018 and saw revenue and net profits grow despite the closure of Capcom Vancouver and the cancellation of the title that they were working on. Specifically, Capcom's digital contents division saw a 70% year-on-year increase in H1 revenue, while Capcom's net profit rose 97% to 6.8 billion yen due to the success of several titles released throughout 2018. This, in turn, is leading to high expectations for Capcom's early 2019 releases, Resident Evil 2 and Devil May Cry 5. While Devil May Cry 5 releases as late as March, it still falls under this fiscal year. Capcom is already having a successful year and hopes to close it out with two strong releases. Capcom also reaffirmed the fact that Monster Hunter World, Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection, Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2, and Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate all performed well. They highlighted the fact that Monster Hunter World has surpassed 10 million copies sold since launching on the PC. Duh. And while
not so
specific
duh.
Sales number.
No, wait, time out. Not so duh, because remember, for a long while, PC was left by the wayside because they weren't getting
absolutely.
The sales.
They were chomping at the bit to get into that game, so I'm not shocked at all that Monster Hunter World, when Monster Hunter World finally did come to PC, people ate that up like hotcakes. And while specific sales numbers were given, the Japanese company stated that Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection and Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2 were successful due to a dedicated fan base and strong brand capabilities.
Of course. I mean, how many times are you going to be able to play Street Fighter 3? Come on. And also the lesser-known Street Fighter 3, I think there was one variation on it that was in that collection.
Not just Street Fighter 3 either. Street Fighter 3 with good netcode, where you can actually have online matches that don't fall out with other people. That is invaluable to a Street Fighter fan. And while Monster Hunter Generations for Nintendo Switch saw robust sales owing to its consistent popularity. Considering that Devil May Cry and Resident Evil are popular franchises for Capcom as well, it makes sense that they are expected to do well. Capcom also highlighted the fact that the titles were well-received when shown off at Tokyo Game Show in September, cementing their high expectations for the titles. While it's likely that both titles will be successful due to the positive buzz surrounding them, Capcom's expectations for Resident Evil 2 and Devil May Cry 5 are still something the series fans should be aware of. Resident Evil 2 launches for PC, PS4, and Xbox One on January 26, 2019, while Devil May Cry 5 follows those same platforms on March 8th. Resident Evil 2 is already something that I think may end up being my game of the year for 2019 based off of everything I've seen about it.
It's in January. By the way, what's interesting is that remember how it used to be that January through June was basically a dead time for video games? And then mm-hmm. Lost Planet came out in either January or February, and it sold like hotcakes, despite being a profoundly mediocre game with a high concept, mind you. I mean, yeah, being on a frozen world with gigantic monsters fighting you, you know, that has an appeal. But it wasn't expected to do well, and it sold over a million for the Xbox 360, and people said, wait a minute, we can sell things after Christmas.
Yep, that was also Capcom.
Yeah,
with Lost Planet.
Was it Capcom or Konami?
It was Capcom.
Okay.
But yeah, Resident Evil. I still need to see more for Devil May Cry 5, just because there's things about it that like make me tilt my head. But Resident Evil 2, I've followed that very closely, and every time I see something about it, I am super thrilled.
Now, before we go on, just so people know that they're not rebooting Resident Evil. This isn't like a weird sequel to Resident Evil 7. No, they're just reissuing a remastered version of Resident Evil 2.
Well, it's more than a remaster, because like Resident Evil 1 on the GameCube was a remaster of the first game. Resident Evil 2 is rebuilt from the ground up, and like it's amazing what they've been doing with it. As far as like me, a Resident Evil fan who has seen that stuff and sort of knows what I'm looking for.
But if you're a real fan, you wouldn't call it Resident Evil. You call it Biohazard.
I can't say that in America, because the reason why it's not called Biohazard in America is because there's a band of the same name that blocked the copyright.
You know, what's funny is that they hedged their bets with Resident Evil 7. It's Resident Evil 7 : Biohazard.
That's how much of a nerd I am. I know why it's not called Biohazard in America.
Yeah, they recently just showed the free costumes trailer too.
And like,
in case you really need to be Leon Kennedy or Claire Redfield.
And even if you're not a huge Resident Evil fan, I feel like, well, people will probably be thrown off by some of the controls, because I still feel like it looks like it's still going to be a little bit tank control. Which I did talk to somebody who's not a huge fan of who hasn't played through all the games, and they were thrown off by the fact that they couldn't just run all over the place and pick things up.
The entire point. Well, here's the thing: Resident Evil was still thinking it could maybe sort of be like Silent Hill, maybe, before they decided, no, we're just going to start shooting everything. But you know, I'm not going to get Resident Evil 2 because there's no little person in a Napoleon outfit who's the main bad guy.
What a god. I mean, he was a fun villain to kill, but also, oh, what a funny ass villain.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference. Resident Evil 4 holds up because it said, you know, we're just going to go for the camp. You're going to be running around Spain shooting people, and then you're going to have this weird villain who's you know, he may be old and he may be a demon, but he still acts like a little kid anyway.
Oh my god! And like, you want to talk camp? The one of the lines out of the last villain of the game that is so damn on the nose of, "Oh, Mr. Kennedy, the Western hero, come in to save the day." Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you knew what you were doing. You knew what you were doing with
and
that
you
line.
You had to escort the president's daughter, because of course you had to. Hey, look, at least she knew how to get away. She knew that she should stay away from anybody, and only a few times should you get picked up and carried around by these cultists. Only a few times. She knew that her place was being behind you and hiding.
That said, I've only watched, like, small trailers of Resident Evil 2. I hear about how good the longer segments are, but I haven't watched any of those, like, 40-minute gameplay videos because, like, oh my god, why would you not want to go into that blind? And, like, if you're a horror fan, why would you not want to go into the horror movie blind, not knowing where the scares are?
Well, you know, the people have been, viewers have been getting copies already. Mm-hmm. You know. And the thing is that all you have to say is, remember how good-looking Resident Evil 7 was? Well, imagine that, but better gameplay and a better plot.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, you know, Resident Evil 7, it's great in the first 2 hours, and then it sort of goes off the rails, and not in a good way. I don't mean because Resident Evil 4 goes off the rails, and it stays off the rails, and it plummets down a ravine, and then it finds new tracks, and then it goes off those rails again. That's the good kind of going off the rails. Resident Evil 7 was sort of like, okay. You know, the first 2 hours are really scary and tense, and then it just becomes a redneck showdown.
Resident Evil 7 ebbs and flows. It starts out really strong, then it falls off a bit. Then it gets really strong again at certain segments. And then I would say that the last maybe third to fourth of the game is not as great.
But I'm saying that we're applying the looks of Resident Evil 7 to Resident Evil 2.
Yes. And Resident Evil 2, like, it's bonkers as well. But it's scary bonkers, not fun bonkers. And it's going to be fun. Like, there are so many different things that I'm just that was probably one of my favorite games of the series, and there are so many things that I'm just waiting to discover when I get to that game, that it, like, certain characters or certain segments that you get to, or certain fights or certain, like, instances of, like, and if every part of the game is done as well as the things that they've shown off, which is a big ask, I realize that, but if they can accomplish making the game that satisfies, I guess you have to satisfy everyone at some point, but if they can accomplish making the game basically Resident Evil 2 with a new coat of polish, a new rebuilt look, and all these new things, I think that it's going to be the best game of 2019 as far as horror. It may be the best horror game of all time.
Yeah, and level loads won't save you anymore. You can't go through that door to load the level. No, they're going to come through that door now, so you can't save yourself that way.
This is 2018, or no, this will be 2019, man. Zombies know how to push through doors in this year.
Yeah, they don't. What a level transition? What's that? I mean, some of the gore in this game is just ay ay ay. I mean, there's one part in which you pick up a skull, and it's like its jaw hangs out, and it's like,
oh, it's complete schlock. It's like complete visceral schlock, and yeah, I love it.
Going into George Romero land.
Uh huh.
So we're going to move on to the final last item, and this is about Red Dead Redemption 2. Michael Pachter says, Red Dead Redemption 2 coming to PC in April, and this comes to us from Gaming Bolt. According to Wedbush Securities analyst Michael Pachter, Red Dead Redemption 2 may be hitting the PC next year. Speaking to Gaming Bolt in an exclusive interview, he said that the PC launch is likely right around the corner, and that the next generation consoles will get the game as soon as when they're out. He said, PC for sure, most likely in April. I'm not sure why they take so long. Next generation consoles are likely as well whenever those come out. Now, this is not, you know, Michael Pachter may be saying this, but there is something to back this up, because some people did a little data mining, and there were references to stuff that are PC related, as well as the Oculus Rift VR, although I will think that was basically because they took so long with that game. And you might remember Microsoft had a deal with Oculus VR to bring VR games to the Xbox One. Which they decided, oh, you know what, actually, never mind.
You know, like,
You remember Game Watcher. I mean, when there were rumors about Red Dead Redemption, the first game, coming to PC, people were hungry. They really want that game on PC.
Absolutely. And, like, at this point, Grand Theft Auto 5 has done head and tails better on PC than it did on any other system.
You have to understand that actually part of that is because you're looking at two console generations, and with PC it's only one, and also people mod the fuck out of Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to get at, is that, like, when you get that modding community involved, it gives the game immense life, and people continue to play, and people continue to buy, and people continue to fiddle. I have no idea at this point why Rockstar would take their time with – wouldn't take their time making a PC version that'll satisfy that same community.
Well, here's the thing. I think with the first Red Dead Redemption, the time wasn't right for a PC version of the game, and they just – didn't know if it would sell, and also you'd have to port a PC and all that stuff. Now, I think they're just teasing the fuck out of PC gamers. I think it's sort of like trying to make them hungrier and hungrier. You know, let the game be out for a couple of months, and then say, oh, by the way, it's on PC, and watch the sales fly.
Yeah. Like, if you don't make that PC version, and you don't make it, I guess, soonish, you're just basically you're giving up free money is what you're doing.
You're running the risk of players that were waiting for PC version playing it on PS4, but either way, they still get the money. So,
or you know, if the new if the PS5 and the Xbox Scarlet, which is its code name, come out in 2020. I think maybe they might wait, because then they could release it on PC with the Ultimate Edition, with all the DLC included, all that stuff, so that they could also sell it on Steam. Because one of the problems with Steam is that Valve takes money if you sell DLC separately. So they may think, you know, we want to max this out. So when we release it on Steam, we don't want to give Valve a penny of DLC money. It'll be the entire, all DLC included. Which means they might have it out in 2020 for PC, along with the next generation consoles. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of graphics it'll be on those. Because it's already amazing. Even if you're playing it on a rinky-dink, quote-unquote rinky-dink PS4, it still looks beautiful. You know? So it'll be interesting to see what it looks like on a PS5 Xbox Scarlet.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. I am playing it on an original PS4, and it still looks really, really, really good.
You think the next Xbox will be called Xbox One 2?
It'll be called the Xbox Y. The Xbox One Y. They just called it the Xbox One X because they like to do a little, Xbox One X. Oh, Xbox. Got it.
I really hope it's the Xbox One XXX.
No, I think BMX ended any sort of no one's going to use XXX anymore after BMX XXX. They ruined it for everybody. You know, I think they might actually just call it an Xbox One X special edition or something like that, you know. Or just call it the Xbox 2. And really confuse people. Okay, so the Xbox came out, then it was the Xbox 360, then it was the Xbox One, even though the original Xbox was supposed to be the Xbox One. Now it's the Xbox One X. Now it's the Xbox 2. What I am happy about is that you know that that whatever you have on the Xbox, next Xbox, everything is going to work on it that was ever released before. And same thing with the PS5. Everything that was available on the PS4 is going to work with it too. Because we've gotten to that point in which console manufacturers are smartening up and saying, you know what, yeah, people do want to play their old games on the new system.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, we took long to figure that out.
Yeah. By the way, we should. That was one news item that I didn't include, which I should have mentioned, is that Sony's coming out with their own version of the Nintendo. What's it called? Console. You know, game. All games on a console. I think they're calling it the PlayStation Classic console or something like that, which comes pre-built with a bunch of PS games.
Hmm.
Am I? Look at this. Is this news I'm making up? Because I'm trying to remember.
I saw it as well. TJ posted it on Twitter.
The PlayStation Classic.
I looked at the lineup.
Yeah, it's a $100 console. And it's going to look like a PS1.
Yeah, they are doing it.
And the old controllers with the no thumbsticks.
Yeah, it's coming with Final Fantasy VII, Jumping Flash, Ridge Racer Type 4, Tekken 3, and Wild Arms, among other games.
There's some good things on there. There's a Persona game on there that literally costs $500 to get a copy of otherwise. And that's a good thing to include on there because, you know, like otherwise you have to resort to emulation, which I'm not saying is
the games that people are pissed off about not coming. Like there are no Spyro, there's no Parappa, there's no Mega Man,
no Suikoden,
and all that stuff. Here's the thing. That's because, and there's no a Crash, because there's already a remastered version of Crash, there's a remastered version of Spyro coming out, you can already get the Mega Man Legacy, you know, they're not releasing anything that you can already get remastered now, they're only releasing stuff that
Scott
you can't find.
Scott has it right, though, there is no remastered version of Suikoden, and my personal wants for it were like Strider 2 and Alundra, which are also things that are hard to find. Like whenever I go to a trade show, I always go straight by the classic games tables and see if I can find a copy of Alundra. And I finally did recently, and it was like $150. And I'm like, no, I'm not gonna pay $150 just for memories. As much as I would love to play that game,
buy it on the PS3 store.
I don't have
a PS3. Here's the thing. You know, Microsoft's not going to release a console like that because they have backwards. If you own the game and it's backwards compatible, you can play it for free. Like, they're not going to release an Xbox console that, say, includes Halo 1 or Halo 2 or Knights of the Old Republic or Jade Empire or Psychonauts because guess what? If you already have the game, you can get it now.
Yeah, and, like, I really am befuddled by some of the games they chose to put on the PS1 Classic, like Resident Evil 1 Director's Cut. Mm. Who asked for that? There are so many different better versions of Resident Evil out there right now. That why would you want to go back and play the most basic rudimentary one? When you could just as easily download the Resident Evil remake on either Xbox One, PC, or PS4.
Although I will say, you know, I should correct myself because Oddward Abe's Odyssey is on it, and there's a remastered version of that out right now too.
Yeah, but I just feel like it's silly that they would put on things on there that like are just so easy to find better versions of. Why Tekken 3? Tekken 7 exists. And even if Tekken 7 didn't exist, there are other Tekkens that are better than Tekken 3. Tekken 3 was a benchmark as far as, like, making that series break out, I guess. But, like, even Soul Blade, or Soul Edge, depending on where you live, was
the first one, yeah.
substantially different from what Soul Calibur is now. And that would be worth going back to, in my opinion.
By the way, I forgot to mention, I did send back Soul Calibur 6. While it's a nice game, the controls just feel a little bit too floaty for me.
Yeah, it's definitely built towards speed and not so much, like, impact, I would say.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I wasn't really that big a fan of Virtua Fighter. And doing entire 3D space, you know, in which you can change the planes, you know, you can rotate around your enemy. It's just not my... I mean, by the way, you know, they did announce the new DLC for that, and they're including 2B from Nier Automata, which is... So now you can have Geralt and 2B fighting each other.
2B is a perfect fit for Soul Calibur. For so many reasons, some admirable and some just wrong. 2B and Ivy fighting each other in a Soul Calibur game works perfect.
Her breasts have gotten even bigger. I didn't even know it was possible. Ivy's going to be able to use it as a flotation device soon.
2B is a perfect addition to a series that has Ivy.
Ivy's boobs have gotten so big, they could shade several small boys.
The only better place for 2B would have been if Dead or Alive happened to include guest characters.
No, Ivy is 2EEE. Anyways, I mean, but, you know, it has Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo, so it's all good.
That's a great addition. There are just some that are not. You waste, like, you could have put better things on there. Instead, you went with Battle Arena Toshinden. That game is trash. Even in the time that Battle Arena Toshinden came out, it was cool for, like, maybe 2 months, and then Soul Edge came out, and it was trash.
What was the name of that that survival horror samurai game again?
Oh, jeez. Onimusha.
Onimusha. I mean, they could have put that on.
That was PS2.
Oh.
That was one of the first games on PS2.
Oh, okay. I was wondering because, you know, I saw a video of it and it looked like a PS1 game, but then again, if it was a launch PS2 game, that's the reason why.
I can think of a billion things they could have put on there that weren't, like, Tekken 3 or Battle Arena Toshinden. I mean, I've already said Alundra, Scott said Suikoden.
It wouldn't be a PS1 without Twisted Metal.
Why not Twisted Metal 2 instead? The better one.
I don't know. How much? I have to wonder about the licensing costs for some of these games.
Yeah, that does become an issue because, like, if you have to hand money to Capcom to publish Strider 2 on your system, that makes sense. And I don't even know who has the rights to Suikoden and Alundra anymore.
I mean, how much do you think they have to pay to get Cool Borders 2 on?
It's probably still Konami for Suikoden.
Yeah. So you're talking, like, the more outside sources you have on there, the more money you have to pay. And PlayStation is back in – PlayStation and Square have always been pretty tight. So I can imagine it's not too much money to hand over to Square to publish some games.
I would like that if Square could buy that.
If you're saying that, then it's surprising that Final Fantasy VII is on the damn system, unless it's just a port. Just a port, you know?
Yeah. Well, I just think that there were better options. It's not a bad list, and there are some games on there that are super valuable that are well worth it, like Puzzle Fighter and the Persona game.
You know it's going to happen then, right? They're going to just say, oh, well, you want those games? Well, you can spend another $100 on the PlayStation Classic 2 with more games for $100.
I'll tell you this. If the PlayStation Classic is as hackable as the NES Classic and the Super Nintendo Classic are, people are going to put those games on there whether Sony does it or not.
Yeah.
It's funny because you look at the plug-and-play system, you know, the new... And it's like in the palm of someone's hand because it's like 45% smaller than the original PS1. It's just tiny. Especially you don't have to have discs anymore. You don't have to fit a CD in there.
Yeah.
But anyway, oh, by the way, it's launching on December 3rd, just in case anybody's interested.
I mean, if you like that stuff, definitely go for it. The Persona game alone is well worth it, because that's not only a little bit of gaming history, but you're good luck finding it anywhere else for cheap.
Actually, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo, because, you know, it's a puzzle game, and, you know, it's always going to be different, and you're just going to be challenging yourselves, and I'm willing to bet you they're going to have online leaderboards.
Yeah, that would be fun.
And especially if you get to play as Dan again. Woo!
Dan Hibiki.
Yes, big red box. That's Dan's power.
Intelligent Cube is also going to be worthwhile because that's a puzzle game as well.
Yeah. Anyways, we've went off the rails. See, we're just like Resident Evil. We just went off the rails. I mean, it should have been a news item, actually, now that I think about it. But, you know, I thought Red Dead Redemption 2 coming to PC was more important to talk about.
They didn't even put No One Can Stop Mr. Domino on there.
What about Avoid the Noid?
Isn't that that's a Super Nintendo game.
Was it?
Or no, that was a regular Nintendo game.
No, I think it was multi-platform.
Avoid the Noid?
Yeah. I know it was based on an NES game. You know, an NES game they just reskinned with the Noid.
Yeah.
It was on PC, I know that much.
Yeah, well, they put on Rayman, and he's just...
Oh, no, it was only on PC and Commodore 64. Unless I'm thinking about Yo Noid.
Uh-huh. God, yeah. Who wants to play the original Grand Theft Auto? I get exhausted just thinking about it.
What, the top-down game? Really?
Yes.
The bird's eye view. I wasn't a fan of the original Grand Theft or Grand Theft Auto 2.
The bird's eye view.
The controls are wonky. And I mean, getting into a shootout in that game, that meant game over. Because actually, getting into a shootout in Grand Theft Auto 3 and beyond is also game over, too. That's why I like Red Dead Redemption and their sequel so much. It's firing a gun isn't like trying to control... It's so much more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, they didn't have machine guns in the Old West, so, and only a Gatling gun.
People are gonna boot up their PlayStation 1 classics and jump into Grand Theft Auto and just be like, "Oh yeah, I remember now. This is awful," and then play something else.
We're gonna go and play Yonoid. That was the NES game. Anyways. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. I have to check to see if we actually got any new iTunes comments. Really?
Yes, please like, comment, and subscribe.
Yes.
Comments are always fun.
Because from what I hear, podcasts are starting to take off, but we don't do the new podcast. The new podcasts want to be more like TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that. We're still NPR radio here.
Yeah, no commercials.
Well, it's not that. It's that we're more dry and just talking about video games and the industry. Mm-hmm. We don't have a storyline. There's no storyline here, folks. Unless I decide, hey, Paul, we're going to shack up now and we're going to become husband and husband together. Then it'll be more like, oh, I forgot the name of that MTV show. The one that was on for millions of years, and I completely forgot what it was called. You know, the original one in which everybody was in a house together.
Oh, the Real World.
Real World, yeah. It'll be Real World, Video Game Real World Podcast. Me and I'm going to be bitching at Paul for not cleaning up the bathroom, stuff like that. Actually, more likely he'll be bitching at me for not cleaning up the bathroom. You're supposed to mop it, damn it. Anyway, you can reach me at Jonah Falcon at Twitter.
You can reach me at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
Especially Resident Evil 2 Remastered.
Yes. All day, every day.
Yeah, 2 months from now. Or actually, it's June. No, actually, it's 2 months and 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So... it'll be interesting to see here, because I know he probably has it pre-ordered and going to buy it day one. It's not like Dishonored 2 in which he says, yeah, I'm going to buy it day one, and it just goes by saying, yeah, I didn't get it.
If I had the money, I would have spent it on the $900 version that comes with the typewriter keyboard.
That damn typewriter. We're going to save now. Let me just type in the...
Make sure you got your ink ribbons out of the box.
Yeah. Actually, I had a typewriter like that. This big metal cast iron typewriter. I don't know how people type fast on it. It was just like you needed fingers the size of sausages in order to press it fast.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the feedback. You got to let the keys lift up because if you try to go too fast, then all of the little...
You get caught together, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Before Scott falls asleep, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye. Bye.